Good morning, Vietnam, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. Hey, hopefully my computer doesn't die this time.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. You kind of, like, exit stage left on that one, didn't you?
Well, you know, I was like, Clint, shut up.
It was, you were sick and tired of hearing me bloviate.
Pontificate. Oh, bloviate's a good word. What are you guys up to? How's it going, Adam? How's it going, Clint? You know, we got more stuff going on with the old world. Hey, Adam, or Clint maybe too. We're new rich men, huh? Looks like Donald Trump paid us a little bit of money there, huh?
Yeah, it came straight from him. He paid out of his family treasury. It was great. The check actually, apparently, that he sent out had his signature on it. He made a point to do that. Mine was direct deposit, so I didn't get
Clint,
to see.
Did you just say check?
I did. I said check.
Check, check.
Check, check. Jeff's a little bit squirrely tonight.
This morning. Oh, yeah. I'm very squirrely.
Get your coffee over there, Jeff.
No, I'm making the sweat, Adam. You know what I'm saying there? Oh, yeah.
No. Well, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, no one knows what that means. Is that like Vietnamese inside joke?
I think it's a new thing that we just created. I don't know what it means either. You guys ever drink Picari sweat?
No.
What? Is that alcohol? Or what is that?
No. So, like, you know, these dudes that were these doctors, that are these doctors, that actually, in fact, are manufacturers of IVs, created their own sports drink called Picari sweat. And they're Japs, so, you know, they're good, you know, just like, you know, they always are. And anyways, I thought that's a terrible brand name, but anytime you go, like, do anything active in Asia, they always sell Picari sweat. So sweat. Oh, yeah.
I don't get it.
So it's like a Gatorade. Is that what that is?
Well, yeah, it's Gatorade, but it's supposed to be better because, like, it's like the same solution that give you, like, an IV bag, but it has, like, flavoring in it. So
I don't know, man. You said it was made in Asia. I don't trust anything Asian unless it comes from Japan.
It is made in Japan.
Oh, then I trust it.
Yeah. You don't trust anything Korean?
Oh, hell no. Fuck. I've been to that country. Jeff's lived there. He knows.
Oh, that's
Wait, correct. What did Adam say in Korea? Hey, welcome to Korea. Check out my malls. That's about all you can do there.
Yeah. Like,
this is all we've got is malls and plastic surgery for the eyes. That's all we have here.
Do they actually do that?
For what?
Yeah, they're all about it.
Really?
They're all about making their eyes like...
Oh, the double eyelid?
Caucasian.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's so lame.
It is. Yeah. I kind of like the mono eyelid thing.
No, but I didn't
Gives
know
me that
this.
Sweat, sweat.
I apparently, I had heard that Iran is the one of the they have like the highest rate of like
Clint.
You know that?
Iran. I didn't know it's that. Iran, not Iran. It's Iran.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but either way, they Iran, Iran. You know, tomato, tomato. They have a high rate of nose jobs, like. It's like a big deal there, plastic surgery, which I would think that would be kind of against
Korea Islam, has the most plastic surgery per capita.
Yeah, how does that make sense?
Seems like that would be against Islam, right? Like it would be some vanity.
I feel like
thing.
Sharia law would be like, no, you can't change anything about your body.
Yeah, that seems like an obvious thing, but maybe
unless it's something like you know, you can only do it if your husband allows it because you know men are in power.
Yeah, there might be some sort of a. Loophole in the Sharia law for the nose job or for plastic surgery. I don't know.
Curious about why would you get? Do they do the full burqa there?
No, I don't think so. Head covering or whatever you call it.
Interesting.
I mean, you could go full burqa if you want to go full burqa.
That's not a Shia thing. That's a Sunni thing.
Why are you going burqa bad if you're or why are you getting? Why are you getting plastic surgery if you're wrapping your head in a burqa?
Their faces. So I think one of the things in Islam, this is a dumbass talking, so don't take this with any kind of authority. But I think part of it is like because they can only show a certain amount of their face, they really are into makeup and you know cosmetics because that's the only part of their face they can show. So they're allowed to go as crazy as they want with their face, but everything else has to be covered. So.
And now Clint has been fatwad. That's it. Nice knowing you, Clint.
Yep. Yeah, I am now Salman Rushdie, but I can't write.
No, but hey, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
When are we gonna be popular enough to be doxxed? Like, I think that's when we really made it.
When you've been doxxed and there's people throwing tomatoes through your windows? Nice.
Hopefully.
Horse carcasses. I think horse carcasses were when we made it.
Well, no, what's it called when you when somebody tries to call the FBI on you, but you just there's like a term for that. People will call the FBI or the SWAT team to come to your house.
Oh yeah, there was a term for that.
And like that people got killed like
playing video games.
Yeah, some dude got killed.
I think
right?
It's called being awesome.
No, I don't think it's so. Not. I think it's called being the ultimate dick because like the SWAT showed up at this guy's house playing a video game, and he came outside and was like, "What?" and he got shot. Like, and he died.
Yeah.
And the guy that called? Is that called swatting? What is that called?
Oh, well, maybe it's called swatting. All I know is that it was super dangerous because this kid was they like took voiceover from when he was playing Call of Duty or you know World of Warcraft or whatever, and he was just like swearing and you know threatening him. But the context of it all was over like a video game. So then they played it for 911 or for FBI or whoever, the SWAT team, and they busted in that guy's house. Or maybe he came outside. I know there's more than one. Definitely more than one of these things happening. So
yeah, it is called swatting. Okay, so yeah, don't SWAT people. It's not nice. It's bad behavior. Guys, what are we talking about? Because we've got a lot. Kind of a lot going on, but kind of not. It's almost like nothing is really changing. We don't know anything more about when we're going to get out of this. Seems like endless cycle of monotony and silliness. I mean, I went today to a. It was kind of a job. It was like my boss wanted me to run up and kind of meet with this physical therapy clinic and kind of like check out their pools and kind of get their reservoir tanks cleaned up and get them kind of up and running because they have our pools. But now, you know, I went up there and he's talking about getting another pool for a third clinic, all this stuff. I just went up and kind of chewed the fat, hung out with them a little bit, got the pools all in order. And I've got to tell you, like having not been anywhere or done anything like that for like weeks now, I came home and I felt great because I was like, man, I did something. Like, I actually did something.
You feel like a man there, Clint.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are gonna once this is over and they you know even go for like you know a basic shopping to like a Kohl's or something to gain you know buy something new for themselves, they'll probably be like, oh, well, this feels good. I've been around people, and I don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah, but
supposedly, I guess 51 minutes ago, Mr. Donald Trump announced a plan for a phased plan, three phases to open up the economy. So.
But what's that mean?
I guess phase one includes much of the current lockdown measures, such as avoiding non-essential travel and not gathering in groups, stays in effect. Says large venues such as restaurants, places of worship, sport venues can operate under strict physical distancing protocols. And then if there's no resurgence of the virus within the next 14 days, phase two allows for non-essential travel to resume. The guidelines say schools can reopen and bars can operate with diminished standing room occupancy. So no sitting room, only standing room. And then once that seems pretty legit, they're going to throw in phase three, which states that states...
That's just a giant orgy. States, that's an orgy.
It looks like phase three is just a gangbang.
Yeah, it's just a... It's like a...
Wait, we got...
It's just Woodstock.
Phase station gangbangs?
Phase three
public interaction with physical distancing is number three.
Phase three is public intoxication up. With like Coachella, Woodstock, Lollapalooza all bundled into one.
Oh yeah, a lot of babies are going to be made.
Yeah,
within that 2 week period.
Oh yeah, that's going
to
be.
And everyone's getting their $1,200. You know, it's supposed to be for essentials, but you know, people are going to spend it on booze and cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's going to fly to Vegas.
The one and only famous Janusz Zaremba once said, you know, baby, you know what's great? Is, you know, no matter how broke everybody is, everybody's got money for booze and cigarettes.
it's a very wise statement for...
Well, it's a fact. You know, I guarantee you, how much... Like, I want to... What is April right now? Like, I want to see liquor sales. What's the natural, like... expenditure going on.
Well, there. It was pretty high until they shut down liquor stores. Like, honestly, man.
They're shutting down liquor stores? Where at?
In Indiana, they're all closed. There's a couple that are like, you know, walk-up window. But you can only buy booze now. I mean, I don't know if anybody stayed open, but I think those are, from what I can tell, are closed. I don't know. It looks like they're closed. The ones, I just buy my beer at the grocery store now, so it's like, that's lame selection, but whatever.
Yeah, liquor stores open here 24/7, except for Chicago. Chicago closes at 9 o'clock, but that's because there's dubious people standing outside on doing dubious things.
Yeah. Right now I'm drinking a beautiful IPA from Rheingeist, which is out of Cincinnati, and it's called Truth, and boy, is it good.
I didn't know anybody did anything or bought anything that came out of Cincinnati.
Dude, I buy only stuff out of Cincinnati because I shop at Kroger.
I support Cincinnati, so if everything's got to be bought, made in Cincinnati, if it's not, then I don't buy it.
Yeah. Adam, do they have Krogers in Lamont?
No, like we got King Pete's Supers and Jewel.
I love Jewel. Clint, what do you got out there in Indiana?
We got Kroger. We got Meijer. We got Walmart.
Oh, we got Meijer. Meijer's good stuff.
I just went to Meijer. I like it. We got Martin's. Yeah, that's pretty much it. What else? That's pretty much it.
We used to have Dominic's over here, and then they went under. Now there's Dominic's.
Wait, what? Dominic's went under?
Yeah, but, dude. Dominic's went hard
they
under.
They probably got bought by Jewel, right? I imagine.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But like any Dominic's that was a Dominic's is now a Jewel, so.
Yeah. We used to call it Dominatrix when we go there.
Yeah. Let's go. I think that's a different place, man. I think you're thinking of a different place.
We used to go to Dominatrix to get when I would have arrived.
Yeah, they'd put this ball in our mouth and yeah. Write this word on the piece of paper. It was like me. They're like, go shopping.
It was because my cousin lived up in Gray's Lake, and so whenever I would go up there and stay with him, you know, his wife was, you know, always just, we would say it to kind of make her upset because you're like, come on, guys! And no, we're going to the Dominatrix now. It was a really bad joke, but boy, we laughed a lot. Like we laughed a lot.
I love laughing.
Yeah. So, guys,
shut up, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, shut up.
I was trying to fill the gap. You know, Adam, come on, man, jump in there. I thought you were all Dominics.
Hey, all right, let's get off the Dominatrix. Dominic's tip. Let's talk about. Hey. Let's talk about.
Settle down, Clint.
I want to hear you guys' take on, because I just watched it.
Everything?
With Lenka. But I want to hear your take on Jimmy Dore's absolutely savage onslaught of insults for Obama's endorsement of Joe Biden video. Because I mean, he really withheld zero punches and went after him hardcore. And it's... If someone's got COVID, hey, if you are...
You COVIDing over there, Jeff?
Hey, I'm COVIDing hard, bro.
Let me just say this. If you are somebody who's on the fence, or if you're somebody who thinks they're a progressive, and you watch that video, and you watch Jimmy basically reveal what are universal truths about what Obama actually did... And he does it in a very harsh way. So if you're an Obama fan, it would be hard to watch. But if you sit there and watch that and just kind of listen to him and take him at face value, because I think, you know, you can look at the record, everything that I think that Jimmy, I don't think Jimmy said anything that wasn't correct. How in the world can you convince yourself that it's okay to vote for somebody like Joe Biden? And that's bundling in his record. Also, bundling in his record, in addition to the fact that he's not mentally well.
Well, I thought was very interesting about that clip was that, we can get into that everything else, but I thought it was interesting just how he kind of like reveals openly that most people don't do about all the wrongdoings that Obama did. And whatever, for whatever reason, like Barack Obama did no wrong, does no harm, never had a bad idea. You know, and most people don't talk about that. And even, I guarantee you, Jimmy Dore saying that stuff, like, What's the rebuttal? I guarantee you, these people are saying like, well, you know, like this whole idea, like you were saying last time, the vote shaming, right? And it's like, it's almost as though if you speak ill of Barack Obama, you also are just like feeding. You're just feeding to the idea that Trump's going to be elected again. Trump or Clinton, like you can't be talking about Barack Obama in a negative way.
Right. Everything that you do to critique the current Democratic Party, which is a total shambles. It's a clown car that's on fire. That's what it is. And then when you hear Barack,
but it has been, and now it's like
no, I know.
Speed ahead.
But you listen to Barack Obama, who is like what Jimmy said, like everybody knows what you're saying is a lie. Like he's just talking about how we had the most impressive field of Democratic candidates, and Joe Biden came out on top, and that was just it's like. That if that was the most impressive field of Democratic candidates the party has ever seen, then the party should have never existed to begin with. Like Andrew Jackson should have never started that thing because it's a like that. What a laughing stock. I mean, come on.
I was outside last night with my buddy, my Dutch buddy, and he just was like, "Yeah, like what the fuck's the deal with your American political system?" He's like. You know, in Holland, something happens, like, all right, everybody out. We're going to have a new election. Like, yeah, every 4 years officially, whatever. But, you know, shit happens, like, every two. You know, you have coalition parties. People get together. It's actually representative within the parliament. Like, A, yes. The just the American sort of electorate class is broken. It's not even broken. It's just utterly pointless, to be fair.
Well, it's captured.
It's an oligarchy. You can't really do anything in an oligarchy.
It's captured by big business, big industry. It's captured.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, like, I mean, there's a reason why Barack gets out of office. And like I said last time, he's worth between $70 and $100 million, right? Like,
He's a brand now.
But given the fact
that Obama Foundation brand. So.
For sure. But, like, you know, if you're like, all right, well, if you use the office, right, to your own benefit, which should be translated to post-presidential status, that, you know, that should be kind of viewed as pretty hypocritical. And, you know, Barack Obama is guilty of it. I would say, you know, for sure, like, the best thing that I thought Jimmy Dore pointed out, again, like, this is why Bernie Sanders is and should forever be regarded as an absolute, I don't know, I don't even want to say like whatever word it would be, but the guy is a sham. And I think...
Sham's a good word.
You know, I just wholeheartedly believe that the only way I could excuse him for his most recent sort of bowing out, or whatever you want to call it, would just be because, like, if he's sick, like, if there's like underlying condition, right, that, like, he had that heart attack 2-3 months ago, and what if he's, like, truly ill, so he's like, all right, fuck it, I'm not going to fight this anymore, so, all right, whatever, then come out and say that, but, like, I think, you know, the Joe Biden thing's curious. I mean, you know, how does it actually turn out to be the case where Joe Biden is the presumptive nominee, given that he was shit.
And I think he raised like the least amount of money of any of them.
Dude, again, like I brought this up, I think two episodes ago or an episode ago or whatever. So I don't want to sound like a crackhead on crack, whatever y'all. You know what I'm saying? They're out of here. But like, dude. Everybody fucking knew the guy had nothing going for him. And then out of nowhere, he's the presumptive nominee. Just like, what was it, like a year ago or whatever it was, when they were doing the Burisma Russia investigations, right? And they're like, oh yeah, Trump's totally doing that because this is going to be the nominee. Wait, what? Like, and then Biden came out. He was so weak. Such an ibid, just pointless, a eunuch, just a guy. You know, he just existed that at one point had some clout. On stage, he was terrible. He was fumbling it. He was gaffing around. Everybody saw him for what he was. And then out of nowhere, oh, no, yeah, it's the black vote. Dude, how in the world did Joe Biden ever gain any steam? And how did the establishment already know 9 months ago that he was going to be the guy? How?
I think it was kind of predictable, though. I mean,
Joe
Biden.
In what world, man?
If you go back to some of the podcasts we did in the past, we were saying it's like going to be Joe Biden versus Bernie at the very end.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, sure. I don't see the shock of any of this. I was more shocked that Mayor Pete got as far as he did, to be honest.
No, Adam, come on. Don't.
Dude, we had a whole episode on how Mayor Pete's going to like get pretty far, and it was like me and Clint on one end, and you're like, dude, Mayor Pete's going to drop out real fast. And then like the top two for us were always Bernie and Biden.
No
way, dude.
And that's
what it ended up being, man.
No.
That's what it ended up being.
No, I think initially, surely, yes, Biden had a chance. Or that's what the idea. But dude, like, throughout that campaign, you wholeheartedly believed that Biden was going to emerge?
I mean, not wholeheartedly. I wanted Tulsi. I was all pro-Tulsi, but, you know, the media ate her alive.
Wholeheartedly, you thought after several, like, whatever, weeks of the campaign taking place and, say, a couple of the debates, that somehow Biden was going to come out of that shit? In what fucking world, man? He was so utterly disastrous every fucking debate. He never had any steam going. Dude, I'm not even kidding you. I have no idea how the hell he emerged as anything out of this. Yes, initially, surely, he had a lot of support because of Obama and like the whole story behind him and so on and so forth. But you literally think out of all the people, out of Buttigieg, out of Tulsi Gabbard, out of Elizabeth Warren, whatever, that somehow he was going to be commanding this amount of control. It's so fucking weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wasn't a strong candidate, but none of the other candidates were all that impressive either. So that's
whoa, Clint, goddamn it, I'm gonna put my foot down on this. This is the problem with American politics. Say it how it fucking is. It was bullshit. I didn't see
it was bullshit.
I was gonna get to that.
He's the strongest candidate out of all of them with regards to the backing of the establishment.
He's proven himself. Exactly. He's proven over his entire track record that he will do what the establishment wants him to do every time. He will. So when it comes to credit card debt and whether you can pay it off or you can't, and filing for bankruptcy, he's going to make sure that the credit card companies will not allow you to include that in your bankruptcy filing. That's what he did. He made sure that the credit card companies were protected. That is not a progressive value. That's not a democratic ideal. That is a absolute corporate a corporate concession. What else did he do? He voted for the Iraq War.
That's huge. I feel like anyone that's voted for the Iraq War needs to get like booted. Like you shouldn't be in the Senate.
Right. You don't get a voice. Yeah. You don't get a voice. If you voted for that big giant steam pile of lies that, that Dick Cheney put out, then you don't belong anywhere near, any kind of policy making. You just don't belong anywhere near it.
I think, and he did the double whammy because he also voted for, or he supported the bailout of all these banks in 2008. Fuck him.
Yep.
I hate the idea of too big to fail because, come on now, we don't know if they're too big to fail if they don't fail.
Well, they're just going to keep
all these
doing
guys,
it.
All these neocons are all about, you know, we gotta do what Ayn Rand wants. You know, we got to go support this capitalism. And then when it comes down to it, it's like, oh, well, I guess, well, I mean, we can only support it if our friends aren't going bankrupt, if our, sugar daddies aren't dying off. We can only support it then.
Why are Republicans only viewed as neocons and not Barack Obama and not Joe Biden?
But they are neocons. I disagree with that.
But
mentality, it doesn't have anything whatsoever to do with Republican or Democrat.
Well, wait.
I mean, Hillary Clinton's a neocon as well.
So Jordan Peterson called an ideology a pathological oversimplification of ideas. Right? It's pathological. What they're doing is, you know, there's been an oversimplification of what the Democratic Party represents.
That doesn't even make any sense. Some ideologies aren't very simple, are they?
No, but they're representative of a simplification of an idea, right? What is Marxism? It's collective good. What is the Democratic Party representative of? The people. What is the Republican Party representative of? Capitalism. Why does nobody say that the Democratic Party, Jimmy Dore says it quite well, is representative of the corporate class? And why does nobody say that guys like Joe Biden and Barack Obama and the people that were involved in his cabinet are neocons? I've never heard that stated publicly. Never.
Well, no, not in the news media, of course not. Like, why would they go against the people that are more or less
feeding
the trout. Yeah,
they're only neoconservative in the sense that they want foreign intervention everywhere. They're not really neoconservative in the sense of like individualistic, individualistic like free market capitalism.
Okay, Clint. So, what is deregulating the banks?
I think in a lot of that, it's not. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what neocons would say about basically intervening instead of letting free market capitalism work. I think a true neoconservative would probably say that the market needs to weed out the weak. But, you know, what they did with the banks was to prop them up and to basically give them bailouts. And same thing what they do with you know, all kinds of stimulus packages. I don't think neocons really buy into that. But I know neocons love the idea of sending troops places to force them into democracy.
Yeah, but no, but why do troops – no. Okay, why do neocons support the idea of sending troops everywhere?
So that they can turn them in. They're the way they would say
democracy.
Like it's a good intention type of mindset. Like, you know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. Their idea, their thought, which is totally flawed and total, you know, horseshit, is they think if they can turn it into a functioning democracy and get rid of a dictator, then they can open them up to markets and thereby make a lot of money.
No, but right. But that's not the basic of it, though. I mean, if you go back to what Leo Strauss, the more or less the granddaddy of neoconservative, is that you have to have a noble lie, and the noble lie is freedom. You tell the people that you're saving, you know, Iraq from God knows what, but you're actually there for oil. You pretend and you lie to people to make your you know, liberal hawk ideals come to fruition. Obama's 100% a neocon. I mean, his attempts in Syria and Libya and drone strikes in Yemen are all 100% neoliberal. I mean, they're all about freedom via violence.
Right. Let me touch on the noble lie part.
My question, though.
No, the noble lie part. Real quick. The noble lie part is, I think you said it. It is ensconced in the idea that we need to lie to make this happen because it'll be good for everybody. If you like read Francis Fukuyama, you know, The End of History, the whole idea is that, you know, we're going to get to a point where everybody's going to be a flourishing, thriving democracy. We might have to break some eggs to get there. But, you know, and tell some lies and do some bad things. But the ends justify the means. We're going to get there and everything's going to be honky-dory in the end, right? That's what they did.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't necessarily believe, right? Like a neocon, right, more or less, is drinking the Kool-Aid, or rather selling the Kool-Aid that, you know, you're doing...
Yeah, he's drinking a different batch. Neocons drinking a different batch of Kool-Aid, but they're still selling it.
right. So they're hitting the batch while selling the batch, a different batch. You know, maybe it's just a little bit more expensive. I don't know. But, you know, it's more or less the idea of basically, you know, what is militarism, or what is sort of the global security complex? I would just say, rather than justifying or stating things in the words or terms that we're always throwing around, because like war in Iraq, war in whatever, blah, 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 blah. All you've done really is just employed a giant security firm to basically monitor the global financial network that's directly and heavily tied to energy systems. So, yeah, you know, what is a neocon, or what is so a militarist, or whatever you want to call it, like, you know, Americans in general.
I call them liberal hawks, because they carry more or less the olive branch while the talons are sharpened for attack. Like if the olive branch, like the carrot and the stick, more or less. That's what it is. Well, you don't want the carrot. We're just going to invade you, like we did with Grenada. Like,
well,
you know?
I don't think anybody. I don't think. Yeah, I mean, I just kind of, that's the way it is. You know, I think whatever happens globally, right, in sort of these flashpoints around the Middle East, say, you know, why is Venezuela so fucked? You know, oh, you guys do not want to play ball at all with your energy resources? Fine, fuck you. Literally, the entire world, except for maybe Putin going to hang out with Maduro occasionally, is shitting on that nation, which
Well, yeah, theory, as they should. Dude, like, well, come on now. Like,
but hold on.
Well, number in one, theory, you have the biggest reserves of oil in the world, or second, or whatever. And
right.
You spend that on what? This fucking military? You spend that on garbage? You give a whole bunch of people some loose change, and then you think that, oh, this is going to solve everything? Like, fuck no. Start doing something. Like, start building roads. Start, like, doing something with the petrol dollars.
Okay,
like,
so
the petrol dollars are gonna eventually flood away. The oil reserves are gonna float off.
But not in our lifetime. And I think the example of this is Norway. So Norway has a $1.3 trillion sovereign wealth fund that's it's based entirely off of oil exploration.
Yeah, but you can't compare Norway to Venezuela. The number one that what's it called? The population differences, the size, the history.
They're not that everything. Huge.
It's just no way.
Why?
It's like, well, you got 3 million people compared to what, 60 million over in Venezuela?
Venezuela up until, and I you could look this up because I have to read more about it, but it whatever. This is like talking out my ass a little bit. But Venezuela up until I think like the 1970s was one of the wealthiest countries. It was in South America, right?
In the 80s, I think, right? Because in the 70s, they had a few coups. Then in the 80s, they, like, stabilized. They had, like, a democracy for a little bit.
So then we ask our question of, like, the democratization, good governance, establishing security networks, working through partners that are energy rich. I think it's curious, super curious, or rather more like a slap to the face that shows you don't play ball. Right? You don't give us access to your energy. You fucked around with tariffs. You said all this shit. You know, Hugo Chavez was literally and should forever be renowned as one of the world's worst leaders, similar to Mao, but for some reason Mao is revered by commie shitheads in China. I'll just say that.
Well, that's years of brainwashing.
Well, yeah. It's still the case.
Let's be honest. I don't think that Chavez was as bad as people make him out to be in the first 2 or 3 years of his reign. He actually did a lot of good shit for the people. I think he did a great deal of good. It's
like literacy.
Sometime around the fourth or fifth year where power like hit his, you know, sometime around then when he became a completely, cultist figure.
Absolute power corrupts. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, the first couple of years of his rule. Right. No way. I would disagree with that statement. Well,
okay, I can't speak intelligently on that point. I've tried to spend time reading about stuff in South America, and then I always ask myself why.
I think open veins of Latin America by what was that guy's name? Eduardo something or another. I like that book. It gives you a sort of Howard Zinn look at what the U.S. really did in Latin America.
Well, I'm also not a fan of Howard Zinn.
I like that guy.
I tried reading the people's history and shit. But anyways,
a lot of good stuff in there though.
Yeah. Sure, maybe I don't know. It's just widely taught.
And actually, a lot of this what we're discussing now goes back to what Clint and I discussed last podcast, which is economic hitmen. You know, Venezuela was great.
Right. But
the economic hitmen were sent in and they were like, listen, you're going to do this and this and this, or we're going to fuck everything up. Yeah.
But it was so overly embellished, that story. And that author, oh man, I wish Garrett was on this podcast because he used to just fucking light into this dude. What is the author's name? This guy Perkins? Is like an uber douche. Yeah.
You got to be an uber douche if you're going to fuck over whole countries.
Yeah, but he's like super, like, dude, come on. I mean, whatever. Again, intelligently speaking about something, I'm not going to jump into it because I'd have to refresh my memory on.
Fucking just jump into it, man. This is what we're here for.
I really wholeheartedly situate myself thinking like, okay, comparative analysis, Venezuela, Norway. Okay, why and how do we sit here and say, the same idea, we have wars in Iraq, we have wars basically, we have the war in the Middle East that's been going on for how many years, Adam? I mean, when were we not warring in the Middle East, ever?
I mean, if we go back to Beirut, I mean, hell, we were in, what was no, that, 82?
Just like historically, when has there not been sort of interest, vetted wars taking place somewhere in the Middle East?
Oh, dude, I don't know, before even the Ottomans fell apart.
Right, so it's been an ongoing scenario. I just think it's like super interesting to say, like, all right, well, like, why is the global community allowing Venezuela to fucking tumble into just absolute destitution?
That because country, then they can swoop in as the democratic saviors.
That's well, let's just be clear about this, right? They started to measure the economic impact on Venezuela in 2019 based on the amount of weight people were losing because they don't have access to food. How in the fuck is that happening today? Why?
Yeah, but from what I understand, I follow. If you know Abby Martin does a great deal of work with regards to Latin America, and she said a lot of that stuff turned out to be false. It turned out to be propaganda by the you know, the president elect or whatever, the president in hiding, and that there was certain sectors that were actually battling, like that were more or less fighting the military, that were starving. Because the military, like, surrounded the, you know, the area or the state or whatever you want to call it, the province, and they were trying to starve out the quote unquote like revolutionary terrorists. So there's a lot of nuance to what's actually happening.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of nuance, and there's a lot of fuckery going on with the United States. Probably, whether you want to call it deep state or the intelligence community, probably undermining them at every turn in every way they can to, you know, basically destabilize them, to try to push for a revolt and revolution to overthrow Maduro or overthrow Chavez. And they've been doing it from the very beginning. You know, that's what's happening. We know that because we talked about what happened to Allende. We talked about what happened in South America over and over again. So Abby Martin's probably spot on right about that. However, that doesn't take away culpability from guys like Maduro and even Chavez late in his term before he got cancer and died.
For sure. I'm not defending these guys. Right, these guys are scumbags.
Right, and I know you're not. You know, you're just saying that I think Chavez had, like they always do, they want to start out in, you know, good intentions, you know, boosted literacy from like really low, probably under 50% up to like 90%. Did some really good programming, tried to get some infrastructure going. But if you have the entire capitalist system against you and these major powers against you, and they, you know, you can't even figure out ways to export your oil, you can't fund things, then you're talking about, like, how long can you hold out with that kind of pressure and that kind of resistance? I mean, globally, it's even.
And you have jealous neighbors.
Yeah,
I feel that, you know, Colombia is always just looking for, you know, where they can completely put a dagger in Venezuela's abdomen.
Yeah, and I'm not a proponent of the Venezuelan system, of their socialist system, but I do think that it's almost impossible to know whether it would work or not because of the conditions they were under. But yeah. I mean, you look at Maduro now, and you look at Chavez's kids, and you look at Maduro's kids, they're freaking swimming in millions. Like, those kids are they're like
yeah, well, I mean,
so swimming in millions.
Oh yeah, those guys need to go. Maduro needs to go, but this new guy that they're trying to prop up, he's just such a pawn of the U.S. and you know, what's that guy's name? He was over at the,
I think, like, Cordera. Is it Cordera or something like that?
Yeah, he's the fucking maybe. Justin Trudeau.
He was
of South
at Trump's
America.
Not inauguration, but State of the Union at the beginning of the year, and everyone was applauding him, and all I was seeing is just like this snake in a suit.
But hold on. Let me say one thing. Like, okay, Adam, you point out different differentiations between research and people are saying what. I just want to make this clear. Okay, whatever the supposed different, like, tactics you're going to take as a reporter, whoever this, whatever her name was, doing research in Latin America and relating this back to the military, that's fine. But this just should be understood by listeners. In a research study carried out by three different separate universities of over 7,000 people, they recorded an average of 11 kilos lost, so 24 pounds in body weight, right? And now over 90% of the country lives in poverty. That is known. Now, whether or not, and I agree with you, it's always important to try to say sort of, you know, what's driving what? Is this in fact truth? You know, how are they dividing? You know, somebody's looking deeper.
I only have one question. Who sponsored the studies?
Well, exactly. That would be something like that. But this is a Reuters feed. You can only trust certain things as far as you can trust them. But to start the debate and have the conversation, I would say, look, man, this is pretty credible, right? It's worth looking further into. And this is back in 2017. You know, the country is basically sequestered. And this is like the same scenario you see with North Korea, where only a few countries outside of their own will actually help and assist them during certain crises, like the famine issue in Pyongyang or whatever, throughout the entire country, should and is, in by and large, the responsibility of the Chinese government to assist with. Why? Well, just like if you have an ASEAN passport, you have a Vietnamese passport, you know, where can you go in the world? Well, you can fucking go to Cuba. You can go to China. Why is that? You know, government-sponsored economic crises, you know, internationally, sort of in these networks, are super prevalent. And now, why is Venezuela the way it is? Yes, Maduro, for sure. For sure. But is it not incumbent upon the international community that we all sit here and, you know, tout around right now today? Well, what's the international community done with Corona? Failed fucking miserably. What did the international community do? If you look at, like, world hunger globally, you know, and maybe Clint's brother could jump in on this because I know the guy loves talking about poverty studies. But, like, to what extent is the culpability shared?
Yeah, but you see, poverty, man, you need to have it. Otherwise, all these NGOs go out of business.
The book Dead Aid is about it.
You don't solve. Yeah. It's just like racism.
Yeah, it's like you need to solve it. Yeah, Southern Poverty Law Center needs racism to exist. That's a fact. Yeah. That's why they have to find it. This is the same thing I said before. If you have a hammer, everything's a nail. Same way we talk about Abe Foxman for the ADL. They have to find anti-Semitism everywhere, or otherwise they can't get money. They can't get donors. So they've got to find ways to really like convince others that, you know, anti-Semitism or racism is out of control, and then they can get more donations. But if they can't convince the public that you know, white supremacy is out of control and a horrible immediate threat to everyone's lives, then they're not going to be able to raise as much money. It's the same. It's a vicious cycle, and it's a conundrum. Is that, you know, you need to have these philanthropy organizations that are trying to do good work, that their whole charter should be how do we put ourselves out of a job. But it's not. It becomes a big business, and then they get addicted to the money that's coming in. They all give themselves high paying salaries. Like, look at the people at Southern Poverty Law Center, and they just turn into an activist group that's trying to basically they're all a bunch of Jussie Smollett's.
I have a question for you guys though. Hopefully not, but they are. I have a question for you guys though. I'm unintelligent this morning, so I'll unintelligently not try to speak on this, right? Barack Obama was extremely vigilant, right, in his approach to Israel, which was very, very, like, not in favor of a lot of things that were taking place, right? Why and how do you guys see this thing playing out with Joe Biden basically going out and saying, like, the ADL, right? So if anybody doesn't know what that is, the Anti-Defamation League, and individuals like Abe Foxman are basically highly revered by him, right? Moving forward, it seems to me, Joe Biden to me just seems like he's totally a puppet, or say bought by so many different lobbying groups. So what do you guys think?
Well, not anymore. He doesn't even know he's bought.
Well, that's maybe true. He has a nice suit though, so he probably must be like, yeah, how do I afford this silk? But what do you guys think? Like, what is the deal with him and the ADL and you know? Yeah,
I mean, for me to be, let's be fair, I think some of the stuff that Obama's administration did with Israel, I agreed with. I mean, dude, fuck the Israeli expansion into Golan Heights and, you know, kicking people out of their houses that they owned for generations.
Yeah.
Like, did Obama do the same thing? That's just trash, man. And then shooting at kids. I mean, dude, you're going to be like, those kids are pissed off at you because they grew up in a giant prison called the Gaza Strip. Like, you expect them not to be angry and throwing stones at you know, Israeli soldiers.
And they have Hamas. Hamas, like, basically brainwashing them all day to hate you. So
yeah,
they've got to know these kids. These kids do not have much agency to be able to figure out what's reality. And they're going to shoot these kids for slinging some rocks. Get out of here.
Yeah. So I do like that Obama, you know, said something about the expansion of settlements and about, you know, not hurting these kids, giving these kids a chance. But he didn't talk to the Israelis. He talked at them from a vantage point of from the Arab lobby. And it wasn't even the Arab lobby per se. It was the Saudi Arabian lobby, which is bullshit. It's pure unadulterated bullshit, because If you want to talk with Israel about Gaza, you got to start talking to them from the vantage point of, you know, the Palestinians, not from fucking Saudi Arabians. Like, why isn't Saudi Arabia taking in any of these, refugees from Syria? Why are they all being sent to Europe and Turkey? Yeah, you know why? Because Saudi Arabia doesn't have a backbone. It doesn't believe in the Arab unity that Nasser believed in the mid-60s. These people are cowards, that's what Obama needs to be, you know, chastised for, is that he stood up with the Saudis against Israel.
But even more so, like, and this is what I don't understand about Glenn Greenwald's stance on the whole Arab divide. I get
it. Can you say like a quick thing about Glenn Greenwald, because you bring him up all the time?
Oh,
what's the guy's stance? Who is
he? Well, what?
Like, yeah, why is he legitimate?
Yeah, good point. So Glenn Greenwald, the reason why I know him and got into like some of his writing was was way before. He used to write for Salon back in the day, and he had his own like blog on Salon, and I used to read him because he was really kind of influential when talking about the whole bailout in 2008, and then he went and did his own thing. I can't remember where he went from there, but he went to The Guardian, I think. He went from Salon, and then he went to The Guardian. And while he was at The Guardian, that's when he was the one that Snowden contacted directly to break the story about the NSA spying apparatus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where he really got, you know, kind of on the map. But right now, then he went on from there to start something called The Intercept, and that's a very progressive, left-leaning publication that is doing much the same that he did before. He basically, Sam Harris and him really get into loggerheads on this, because Sam Harris is obviously very pro-Israel in terms of just supporting the culture and supporting the fact that he thinks Israelis are mostly rational, whereas the Hamas and the Palestinians are more irrational. And this is where I get it. This is where I... Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, this is where I get into this thing where I was very, I wouldn't say anti-Israel. I was anti-Israeli policy, like what Adam had said about, you know, sort of them taking land that's not theirs and moving in and sort of like setting up more settlements on, the West Bank and some of those areas. But like when I look at sort of just look at culture, and this is where you get postmodernist and you get sort of the far left, the regressive left saying that culture doesn't matter. And this is a clear instance where culture does matter. Like if you're a young gay kid and you're living in Tel Aviv, you're pretty much, I mean, as long as your family is not super like ultra conservative, but the society itself is fine with you being gay. Like nothing's going to happen to you. You can go out to nightclubs. You can go hang, you can probably hold hands in the street. You can do whatever you want with your boyfriend, whatever. Like in Israel, you're fine. But if you do that same thing in, you know, Gaza, or you do that same thing in the West Bank, you are probably gonna get murdered. I mean, honestly, that's
by your own family members.
By your own family. That's how stark the contrast is. So it's like I want to support the Palestinians because I think they are in a lot of ways victimized by this whole thing that's happened to them throughout, you know, at post World War II. But when I see the culture that is underlying it, it's like, do I really want that culture to survive and succeed? Not really. I want to see that culture reformed and maybe even break down and become something better, because, you know, throwing, you know, gay people off of rooftops, or basically making women have to be almost totally subservient to their you know, husbands, this kind of stuff is not, in my opinion, something we should be celebrating or boosting up or propping up or supporting. Whereas in Israel, they are pretty much a completely open society when it comes to civil liberties, at least in my opinion. There's a lot of people that would push back on that and say that Arabs are treated like second class citizens and yada yada. But there are some Arabs that are in parliament as well. So, you know, Israeli parliament. So I don't know. It's hard to.
I think the best way to look at this is through the eyes of maybe not the best way, but somebody that I kind of respect is Norman Finkelstein. He wrote a great, great, great book that I highly recommend people read called The Holocaust Industry, where he more or less just takes Israeli foreign policy and sees how it applies to culture, and how the Israeli government more or less just propagates this anti-Semitism for its own purposes. So let's say that something happens and has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with Israeli culture or even Jewishness at all. They insert it in there in some sort of capacity, so then they can use it as a propaganda tool at home and abroad via Abe Foxman. And it's a wonderful, it's really well-researched book about this whole idea of how Israel uses propaganda against the Palestinians. And on top of that, Normal Finkelstein really hates Alan Dershowitz, and that's
yeah, he does.
That you can't go wrong with that.
Well, but I think it's important to also point out, Adam, so you knew him kind of in a way, whatever. He was a professor at he was at DePaul, right?
He taught my Middle Eastern class or Middle Eastern politics. So what class.
Brilliant guy.
So yeah. What happened to the poor bastard?
Well, man, this is so I went to DePaul for my undergrad, and the year that this guy was supposed to get tenure, I got lucky enough to have a class with him, and then the semester after that, I signed up for a class, and he was up for tenure, which was amazing. This guy's brilliant, and a certain Alan Dershowitz sent a letter to the dean of DePaul University here in Chicago saying like, I don't know, you guys probably shouldn't give this guy tenure. At the time, this is like 2007, 2008, everybody was all up on Alan Dershowitz at the time. He was the best. Everybody loved the guy, that piece of shit. And, Normal Finkelstein didn't get tenure. He didn't get tenure. There was major protests all throughout the university. Students and just people from all over the country started showing up at DePaul. And, it got pretty hairy. Eventually, Finkelstein just said, like, listen, fuck it. I'm just going to leave. Like, thank you, everybody. And he just left. It was voted 4-3 that not to give him tenure simply because of a letter from Dershowitz.
Dershowitz, yeah.
And after that, he ended up going to becoming an American associate or professor at American Association or something to that extent.
You know what's hilarious is that I sent Dershowitz I don't know where I found it, but this is back when this was all happening, Adam, and I sent Dershowitz a text message. Because somebody posted his phone number, somebody doxed him, and I sent him a text message, and I said something like to the effect of, "Hey, what you're doing to Norman Finkelstein is unprofessional, it's unfair, and you should be ashamed of yourself," or something. And he wrote back, he texted me back and said, "Thanks, you anti-Semite. I'm gonna use this in my, I'm gonna put this in my next book. I'm gonna put your text in my next book." And I was like, okay.
Fuck him.
I was like, all right.
Think about this. Eli Weissel and Lieży Kaczynski and
Hold on. Clint, that actually happened?
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, for sure.
Dude, that's awesome. That's awesome. And fuck.
Just FYI, I don't know if he still is, but I think he is. He's the dean of Harvard, right? Is that correct? Or the head of the law school?
The law school, Harvard law.
Yeah, he's the head of Harvard law. So Clint texted the head of Harvard law, I call him a douche, and the guy responded.
Yeah, in a very petty way, too.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was so funny. I was like, I was shocked when I saw it. I was like, what the hell? I had no...
Dude, how many people texted him? Is that fucking real?
He must have gotten thousands of text messages.
He must have gotten
like
thousands.
He just must have. At that time, people were like showing up at his office in Harvard and like putting like more or less death threats.
But he literally called me an anti-Semite and said he was gonna, and I didn't say anything like critical of his position, which I think his position was fine to have.
What do you mean anti-Semite? Like Finkelstein's a Jew. What are you talking about? Like. Come
right.
on now.
He's
standing up for Finkelstein.
He calls Finkelstein a self-loathing Jew.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
So, anyway. I think that was 2007 when that happened.
Like 2007, 2008. It was somewhere around then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, craziness, man.
Oh, there it is. It's June 2007. So it's at the end of the semester.
Yeah, that would have been right about when I was like, because I know I remember reading about it because I was like really, I was watching. I don't know if you ever watched it, but Norman Finkelstein's debate with Dershowitz on Democracy Now, which was just an epic because he just basically goes through his book and like just rips him because he's like, okay, you plagiarized this. You got this. This is not your idea. You've done this. Yeah, dude. This is the old trick you're playing again. This doesn't work. This is a lie. This is a historical inaccuracy.
Yeah,
and Dershowitz just kind of was like sitting there, like, you know, kind of quietly, like trying to disappear into the, you know, wishes dude, he wasn't
Norman
there.
Norman Finkelstein, when it comes to research, I mean, he was taught by Chomsky. That this guy like, no, like, dude, just the Holocaust industry has like 120 pages of just you know, citations and bibliography. It's unbelievable. So like, when, you know, when you have Dershowitz, you know, the scumbag of a lawyer.
Well, both his parents survived the Holocaust, and because they survived the Holocaust, I don't want to say that Dershowitz did this, but other, like, you know, super pro-Israel Jews were saying, oh, the reason why they survived is probably because they were capos, or capos, whatever you want to call them. You know, like, mm-hmm. they were put in charge of, you know, doing all the dirty work for the Nazis. That's the only reason why they survived. That's the only reason why, you know, most of the Jews that got out survived. And which is like such a slander, like, especially if you don't know that.
Of course it is.
Like, it's a horrible thing to, you know, say. You know, you survive a concentration camp, and there's no evidence that can show that, you know, at least there was never any evidence brought to the floor that his parents were involved in that. And they're being called, like, you know, doing the Nazis' dirty work, which was a real thing, by the way. Like, they would find the Jews in the camp that were, you know, had enough self-interest, they didn't want to die. And they would say, okay, as long as you do all this, you know, horrible stuff to your fellow Jews, then we're going to give you preferential treatment, like better meals.
Yeah, but a lot of those Jews, you know, that were capos ended up, or they used to be people that used to be prisoners. They used to be horrible people to begin with.
Right, right, right.
They were like thieves and murderers that, you know, just were Jewish.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's all it was.
Yeah,
that's so like a majority of capos were just horrible people to begin with.
Man. Crazy, guys. We did an hour.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to talk about. We can go on this thread forever.
Yeah. Let's talk about the story, or rather the article that that Jeff sent us.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting.
I didn't read it.
Yeah. I actually just skimmed it. So, Adam, maybe you can jump into it.
You son of a bitch.
Actually, let's not get into it if we didn't all read it, because like to talk about it in depth. I just didn't have time because I had to run to that job site today, but
well, check it out. It's actually pretty decent. We'll talk about it next
time. It looked good. We're gonna do that. It's a George Orwell, which is always gonna be good, and Jeff recommended it, so Jeff didn't even read it, but Jeff thought it looked cool. So.
Jeff didn't even read it. That's the problem. He's sending things he's not reading, dude. What if there's just a bunch of boners in that story?
Well, no, I read you know, enough to send it, but you know, yeah, a bunch of boners, then it'd be a way better story.
Yeah, it definitely would.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right, you jerks. I'm gonna go grab another one of these Rhine guys and go hang out with my wife because she's had a really tough day. So, boys, great talking to you. And
likewise.
And I hope you guys all make it to the cabin in the deep snow.
Well, yeah. Sounds good. I'll see you Sunday.
All right, boys. Be good. Right, awesome. Be good. Be healthy. Wear your mask, okay? No coughing.
Yep. Share, subscribe. Thanks, guys. Peace.